From Artema Developer at www.artema.com, this is Leading Edge Java. In this Leading Edge Java audio broadcast, we present a lively JCP roundtable discussion that took place at Java 1 2005. Hello, this is Bill Venners, Editor-in-Chief of Artema Developer, home of Leading Edge Java, the magazine for the advanced Java developer at www.artema.com/lejava. At the Java 1 2005 conference, the Java community process celebrated the one-year anniversary of JCP 2.6, the most recent incarnation of the JCP's working rules. JCP 2.6 is the latest in a series of steps that has transformed the JCP into a vibrant community of Java developers and organizations that has become a driving force behind Java's progress. What made this transformation possible? What causes competitors to work together on common standards? What's in store for Java's future? These were among the questions discussed at the Java Community Process Roundtable, which took place on June 28, 2005 in San Francisco, California. The panel was moderated by Kay Kepler, editor of Java Pro Magazine, and consisted of Ono Clout, the JCP's director, and 9 JCP spec leads. In this audio broadcast, we present the roundtable discussion in its entirety.
Alrighty, good afternoon.
Welcome to our press panel. My name is Ono Clout. I'm the chairperson for the JCP for Sun Microsystems. Together with me here at the table, a collection of spec leads and executive committee members. So, various topics that we can cover. The panel will be moderated by Kay Kepler of Java Pro. So, before we really start going with the discussion, I was wondering if we could go counterclockwise. Boy, that was a difficult algorithm to process. And just with short introductions of who we are. Margaret.
My name is Margaret Franz from Siemens AG, representing Siemens in the executive committee. I'm with Java since the ECMA approach and holding the Java Center inside Siemens at corporate.
Okay. I'm Kim Malotana from Nokia. I am the specification lead for JSR 179 location API, and at Nokia I'm senior technology manager leading a team responsible for our JSR standardization activities.
Hello, my name is Ekaterina Shubina. I'm a senior software architect at Siemens, and I work in the area of architectures for mobile devices and infrastructures. And I'm a core spec lead of the JSR 253 mobile telephony API.
I'm Jim McPherson from Motorola, fellow technical staff, spec lead for MIDP2 and MIDP3, as well as the executive committee member from Motorola.
I'm Ono.
I'm Kay Kepler. I'm the editor of Java Pro.
My name is Gary Magnuson. I'm from the Apache Software Foundation and represent the ASF on the executive committee.
I'm Mark Reinold. I'm from Sun Microsystems. I'm the chief engineer for the Java Standard Edition platform, and at the moment I'm the spec lead for JSR 270, which is the umbrella JSR for the SE platform version 6, codename Mustang.
I'm Andreas Ebert from Nokia Networks. I'm a software developer at the operations support department and spec lead for the JSRs 264 and 89, which are both related to the OSS 2 Java initiative.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Deutsch from Oracle. I'm Vice President of Standard Strategy and Architecture at Oracle. That means I'm responsible for all of our participation in external standards and consortia forums. In that capacity, I represent Oracle on the EC, that's the Executive Committee for Big Java, J2SEEE, and I've been involved in that since its inception.
My name is David Neuscheler. I'm from Day Software, probably the only name that you don't recognize around here. So company-wise, I'm the lightweight around the table. I'm the spec lead of JSR 170, which is the content repository API for Java technology. And I'm very happy to be here. I've been involved in the JCP for roughly 3 years.
Our format today is that we're going to have a conversation among the members here, which will be triggered by some questions that I'm going to ask. We'll be talking for about an hour and 15 minutes or so, and then we'll take questions from the audience. So the microphones are set up for you to use, and we'll just wait to the end, and you can address either the group in general or any specific person that you want. I hope the name tags here in front will help you with the IDs. So I thought we would start today with the basics, and maybe, Anna, you could fill us in a little bit with a brief timeline of how the JCP has progressed since it was founded.
Sure. JCP was started in December 98, it was started a little bit as an experiment, if you will. Sunnet made a commitment to the Java community that it would standardize together with the community the Java technology. It wasn't sure how that how well that would work. So the first version, if you will, of the Java community process was set up relatively defensively, so that Sun had means to pick up the pieces if it wouldn't work out. So, for example, copyright for specifications would also be assigned to Sun, and other such manners. The team at Sun at the time, the program office, my team at the time, made key decisions on behalf of the community of which proposals were accepted for development, who became spec lead, and such things. Over the next 2 years, at the gentle nudging of our partners in the Java community, we made some changes, the nudging from partners like Oracle and IBM and Nokia and HP and others, I think, was for good reason. Where Sun was asking these partners to commit to this process with regards to the standardization of the technology, and I think, but I'll ask Don to give his view in a moment. And I think the partners fairly asked Sun, well, we would like to see a trading kind. We'd like to see some similar kind of commitment from you. So that led in June 2000 to the introduction of what became known as JCP2, where key decision-making ability was delegated from Sun Microsystems to two elected bodies representing the membership. So the two executive committees, one for the Java Micro Edition, and one for the Java Standard and Java Enterprise Edition. And these two bodies then vote on proposals for Java standardization three times during the life of such a JSR. Those bodies also work with Sun to evolve the rules, the governance of the IP policy and such of the Java community process. Then later in October 2002, we made another key change in the Java community process, which became JCP 2.5, and that was to guarantee that open source implementations of Java specifications was a possibility, that opportunity was there, so that a spec lead needs to provide licenses on the specification, the reference implementation, the test suite, so that an interested party that wants to build a compatible implementation but wants to do that on an open source license can do so. I think it was especially important to members like the Apache Software Foundation, where an organization like Apache, as a community itself, with its own charter, tried to be a good citizen within our community with our charter. And they think felt that in order to try to comply with our charter, they had to violate their own, and of course that's a situation you can't have. So then, in a perhaps somewhat lengthy effort, was finalized in October 2002, that we guaranteed the ability to do open source implementations of Java specifications that would then finish from then on.
Then last year in March, we came to the current version of the Java community process, and there we focused on, if I may say it this way, their spec leads, to more firmly encourage spec leads to have the behavior that we'd like to see. So to be as open and transparent about the spec development process, about the sign decisions that are being made in the expert group, working drafts that are being worked on, and so on, that it is easier visible both by JCP community members as well as by the 4 million Java developers at large. And well, we have here several spec leads here that are trying to make the best of that. So I'm sure you'll hear your their opinions of how that goes. So that is where we are now. The JCP has 912 members. We're still growing each year. We have now 278 JSRs submitted since the beginning of the community, which means roughly 40-45 new JSRs a year. A third of those are finished, and about 100 are still in progress. How did I do, Don?
Good. From the nudger to the nudgy.
Java has been about 10 years in the making, and the JCP maybe about 7 years in the making, and some people would say that Java has entered the mature phase of its growth, adaptation, and expansion. Would you all agree with that? And if so, how has the Java community grown with the maturing of the platform?
Well, I can certainly answer that for the last 3 years that I've been involved. I can't really judge it before that. And there's really two things that I want to say where I really can say how this entire thing has matured, the JCP has matured. First of all, with the introduction of JCP 2.5, introducing more open source opportunities, not just for implementations, but also for the specs themselves. So as far as I know, our JSR, JSR 170, is actually the first JSR to be licensed completely under an Apache-style license, meaning that the spec is licensed Apache, the TCK is licensed under an Apache license, and the reference implementation is licensed under an Apache license. So it's no longer just theory that this can happen. It actually happened, and since the final release, which is 2 weeks ago, we actually know that the theory actually withholds, and it actually works. At the same time, I told Jim that just a couple of minutes ago. Mark, Jim, and I, we were like 2 years ago. We're sitting in the room over there with the JCP 2.6 expert group, and they're basically asking us, what should we change? What do you guys want to see? And I was thinking, they're kidding us. They're just, I mean, I'm from a small company. What do they care? I just gonna tell them what I want. And surprisingly enough, and that's really something that I find outstanding, it's really they changed the process exactly what we recommended, what we said. Well, this is something that bugs us. Can we, for example, I still remember my main goal was no longer to have the community review being limited to the community, but just making it open. I just mentioned that in a meeting, walked away, and sooner or later we have 2.6 in our hands, and guess what, it's in there. So I think this adaptation is something that I wouldn't have expected from a standards committee. To me, it's always, I always had this idea of a crusty standardization process, but obviously the JCP is a very dynamic, very adaptive process, and I can only applaud to that.
Yeah, when we had that conversation, we also talked about the transparency. When I went through MIT2, one of the big issues was the lack of transparency that was allowed from expert group to expert group, as well as inside of the JCP to outside, and I had to do strange things like be a member of six different expert groups at the same time while also leading MIT2 to be able to bridge the gap between some of those. And that was, I applaud the EC as well for listening to the spec leads and fixing a lot of those problems.
So you're now leading MIT3, so are you still having to be on many different other expert groups?
No, it's much better. So there's a lot easier ways to facilitate the conversations, both inside different expert groups as well as with standards bodies on the outside.
So your JSR will become much quicker now?
Yes, if it weren't so large.
I think there's another dimension. I agree with everything that's been said where we've focused on process, but you start out by saying it's a mature forum, let's say. And you might say that the technology has matured and that we have, 4 million or developers, but it's an evolving forum and an evolving technology. When we started, web services weren't service-oriented, architecture wasn't. While we had an ME activity, the recent growth in the focus in the ME space is something which reflects a evolution of the technology as well. So yes, the JCP process is evolving. As Ono described, in sometimes those of us think too small steps, but basically steps that are addressing specific communities as they come up. But so is the technology, and I think the JCP gets pretty good marks for being able to accommodate the technology as it evolves and addresses requirements that we couldn't even imagine.
Right, and I would say the best marks that I would give the JCP is for actually implementing the standards. It's not just the standards body where stuff is being specified and then nobody cares about it. And I think really a couple of reasons there is a couple of reasons behind that. First of all, that it mandates a reference implementation on TCK, I think, is a very important cornerstone, because that just allows people to actually see that stuff works. It's not just something written on paper and nobody really knows how it works. And the second thing is that really the JCP makes sure that there are no conflicting or no overlapping, to a certain extent obviously no overlapping specifications, which gives a specification a certain safety net behind it, so you know this is going to be the only implementation, the only specification for a certain point in time, and it's not like somebody can come up with two or three competing JSRs. And I think that's really one of the most important things of a standardizing body, that you actually get adoption, that you actually get the implementations done, because who cares about a standard if nobody uses it?
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. The fact that an RIA is required, I've been involved in a couple of other standards bodies over the years, and you know, you get 40 people in a room designing a spec and they produce 1,000 pages and nobody's ever implemented it, is really quite scary, especially when it's an important spec and that has happened. So requiring the implementation is just an extremely important thing.
I have to agree there. So the OSS through JVA initiative has exactly for that reason chosen the JCP as its standardization process, because in the telecommunications industry there's no comparable process in place where implementation is actually required for the specification. So when we started the OSS through JVA initiative in 2000, we were looking about what process we can leverage to do the standardization, and we chose JCP for exactly that reason, that the RI and TCK is mandatory.
I think going back to what Don said about the technology evolution, JCP is kind of nice in the flexibility that allows as well, because like you mentioned, when JCP was started, MIDP didn't exist, Java on mobile didn't exist, so it was possible to do this in the greenfield of a new market, a new revolution. At the same time now, we're continuing to evolve it with both from the perspective of MIDP2, MIDP3 evolutions, but also the other JSRs that are optional packages that fit around that augment it in areas where, you know, perhaps not all devices implement, only certain kinds of devices implement it. So that kind of modularity and flexibility is also good.
I think that natural evolution is something that's really great, and that gives the evolution of a standard that you already passed. A lot of people, since my JSR just got approved 2 weeks ago, a lot of people were asking me, so what are you doing now? Are you going on vacation for 3 months or something like that? And my answer was, no, I'm preparing the next submission for the evolution of the standard, because it's really at the end of the standard. Obviously, at the beginning, we didn't know what would expect us. It's my first JSR, so basically, we were not sure if we were happy with the experience after the fact. But in the end, everybody in the expert group actually agrees that we want to continue the development in the JCP, and I think that's already a great achievement. And really, at the end, when you went through all the stages, you say, hey, let's do that again.
What I like about GCP pros is that, as you said, David, that everybody agrees. What I like is about open communication, and that actually community decides all together, so whether we would like to continue technology and in which direction, and that is what makes this technology so useful afterwards. So.
Well, that sort of speaks to the next question, which is more about processes, I guess. If Java is if not matured, in any way evolving. Has the community evolved with it, and how is this reflected in terms of processes, maybe in who participates or how they participate?
Well, I can start there. Because of the changes in JCP 2.5, it really opened up Java for implementation by the open source community. Because what this allows now is us to be able to implement the software, compatible implementations, and distribute it as we like to under open source licenses, which wasn't able to be done before 2.5. So that's brought open source community has always played a strong role in Java, but not necessarily in implementation and specifications. And this change has allowed us to implement even more and participate even more by implementing specifications.
Right. With respect to open source, we, for example, chose the path to actually have our open source, our reference implementation based as an Apache project. And that I can only recommend. It's a fantastic ground to do that because people are banging on that reference implementation from day one, and you're gonna have hundreds and thousands of people actually looking at your reference implementation, committing patches and so forth, which was fantastic. I mean, when we actually have a bug in the reference implementation, we know it half an hour later because just somebody checks it out, builds it, finds the bug, and sends a patch. They don't just say it doesn't work; they actually tell you exactly what's broken with it, and just as a test bed. That's, I would say, like 10 times better than the whole TCK.
I mean, at Apache, license is important, but more important is that collaboration of the community. And by doing the RI at Apache, you now have a much larger community being able to engage with the software, participate with each other, and actually just use it, right? Real-world use of the implementation.
We've had some changes in participation as well. I mean, I'm taking your question in the broadest sense that 5 years ago, we had members, you know, actively engaged in the JCP, and they aren't with us anymore because just of the evolution of the marketplace. They've been acquired, or they've gone out of business, or, you know, and so, but at the same time, we've added new members. So again, it's the, sort of the evolutionary kind of thing. The process has been changing, and in changing the process, I think we have addressed some of the concerns of communities that might not have been as engaged, such as the open sources, as we would like. At the same time, the technical developer community has been dramatically changing. So, and the JCP reflects that.
I guess in terms of process, I just wanted to add a couple of comments that I think that current JCP process is transparent and it helps a lot. It helps spec lead to proceed with the GSR. And this is what I appreciate very much currently in GCP process, that it helps it provide necessary support to come to the successful GSR to achieve this result.
Speaking of new participants, what about Microsoft? This, you know, they're here this time. Most enterprises are heterogeneous, or soon will be, according to analysts. How can the Java community and the JCP embrace and extend the .NET paradigm? Do you think they have any intentions?
I think I'm not going to be the first to answer this one.
Can they play a role in the JCP?
I think Microsoft can play a role as a member of the JCP just like anybody else, and they can do that by doing what all the other JCP members have done, and that is signing the same agreement that we're all collaborating under. And if they do that, then I think they're welcome. They clearly are a stakeholder in the industry at large. I think most of our customers of our collective companies here do have to make mixed environments work. So there would be value there, but it's up to Microsoft to go and accept the same participation rules as everybody else has done.
I remember this question at every press briefing we've ever had, and the answer has always been: this is an open forum. It is welcome to anybody that is willing to sign up on the same terms that those who are at the table have signed up on, and we'd love to have Microsoft join us. I'm pleased that they're here at Java One, and we'd like to have them participate more.
Of
And I can extend that invitation at least to my JSR, and I would certainly accept that. any participant from Microsoft in my expert group. I would love to have them in there.
As a big organization like Siemens, we're using a lot Microsoft internally and also for products and interoperability. With your products between the different technologies we have to have, so we would like to see this working together using technology-based .NET Java interoperability. It's coming, Sun is working on this. And so the freedom of choice to build your products which needs whatever need needs in the market, more to the left or to the right.
But we have to recognize that .NET is a closed single source technology, and we're working on a collaborative effort to create a technology that is shared and
based on specifications.
Yeah, right. So maybe we can build some bridges, but the way your question was phrased, I would be seriously surprised if we were actually ever engaged in extending the .NET platform, because it is not in the public domain. Okay? It's not available to a community.
Right. To a certain extent, I have to say that I've even heard of hindrances from people that are taking JCP specifications and try to port them, or obstacles. I think I heard something about JDO being ported to .NET and the respective legal implications with that. Maybe that's something where a third party tried to port something over to a .NET assembly, and that's probably the first way to get adoption, rather than involving Microsoft directly, to go through third parties porting stuff over so the same technology is available on the Microsoft platform too. I don't know.
Well, I read something a while ago I'd like to talk to the J2ME folks about, and it sort of ties into Pretty Kohonen's keynote this morning. The fragmentation of the mobile phone market, where there's so much going on, so many devices, so many issues. I read that this article said that open source and Linux were taking over the field. But according to Purdy this morning, Nokia alone has shipped or will be shipping 300 million devices by the end of the year, which seems to contradict that. So given the difficulties of this market, does working in Java or the process of the JCP make any of this easier?
Yes. Are they really orthogonal? Open source and Linux and Java?
No, we see them as being complementary.
Yeah.
And we don't see this as being a hindrance as such. Some of the fragmentation issues are based on market demands. We have a very dynamically evolving market as well as the device characteristics. You see lots of different types of mobile phones with lots of different screen sizes and keypad layouts and physical constraints. And so a lot of fragmentation issues come from that, because if you develop your content for one screen size, you move to another screen size, you know, that's a difference. So some of those kinds of things you're not going to fix. Other aspects are, since we're in a dynamically evolving market, we have a lot of different JSRs that are rapidly being deployed. So keeping up with a common set of JSRs that we all implement is something that's being worked, for example, in JSR 248, the umbrella JSR, where all of the relevant companies are getting together, coming up with a common agreement over what JSRs we're all going to be implementing for each generation.
Yes. So Nokia realized about a year ago that this fragmentation due to different combinations of the JSRs being implemented by different devices, and also different optional features inside a JSR being implemented by different devices, causes some headache to the application developers, and therefore we initiated the JSR 248 and 249 mobile service architecture work together with Vodafone, where we have involved all the industry leaders in the expert group and are trying to defragment the market by defining a common core platform which should be common across all manufacturers and all operators and carriers.
The other aspect of it is, as you get real market deployment experience, you find out all those areas of the specification that weren't quite tight enough,
or the things that you thought that you were specifying but you really didn't realize that you didn't. You thought we were clear, but you really weren't when it came to real market ship time. So as like, so now in mid P3, that's one of the big thrusts is, what did we do wrong in mid P2? And we're trying to engage with the developer community, even outside of the JCP members, to try to get feedback on what are the things that are causing them headaches and differences in implementations that we could feedback into the spec to make it even tighter and improve interoperability.
Right, and I think these ambiguous areas in the specifications are something that specification leads should probably have a closer look at and maybe use the maintenance release process of JSRs more frequently to fix those bugs early on, so that we don't need to wait 18 months until the next major release, but have those specs tightened up as the holes are discovered.
Especially with 2.6, where you now have the early draft, which is open to the public, it's easier to get the feedback earlier without the EC sitting there and looking at this and voting for this. But there's still JSR out there which want to fix and close to final everything until EDR. And I think we have to more evangelize our spec leads to say, okay, if we have the first architecture, the first thoughts how to do this, please go to EDR to get more feedback and have really the whole community and the world participating at such a JSR.
So, Kimo, just for my edification, the maintenance mechanism that we have in place now is not sufficient to address the kind of errata that you're talking about?
No, I think it is sufficient. Spec leads just should use it more.
Okay.
Because it's actually a fairly lightweight process to do that, so it should be used more frequently.
One of the balancing issues there is trying to decide, if you do lots of rapid-fire maintenance releases, in its own way you're causing some fragmentation because it's lots of different versions of the same spec, versus doing very, very infrequent releases, which means that you have a lot of ambiguities that really need to be fixed. So that's always a constant tension that you have to work through.
Well, what do you think would be a suggested time frame for, or how many maintenance releases, how frequently would you do them?
I don't know, you're a spec lead, you tell me.
Well, I haven't done any now, but I would guess somewhere in the 3 to 6 month area.
It probably depends on market and what implementation frequency is going to be.
Right.
In the mobile space, it takes more than 3 to 6 months to deploy a product. The implementation takes longer and the test cycle takes longer. But yeah, it more frequent is probably the trend that we need to look at.
We should probably take this offline. But it sounded to me like you were talking about interpretations as well as errata. Errata is when the spec has got an error and you're going to correct it. You're suggesting if there are ambiguities or something that maybe we need an interpretation process of some kind. So maybe we should.
I think also with errors, there's a panel early in the week where James gave a wonderful example. That so to say it is a spec for building cars, and so the spec in there is an API to make the car turn left, but unfortunately there's a bug in there, so when you say turn left, the car turns right.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do now with the in the next version of the spec, because by now most of the car manufacturers have figured out to make the car turn left, they say right. So if you now all of a sudden in a major release or so you fix that bug, now all of a sudden all the cars crash again. Mm-hmm. So I think you also see that I think with sort of errata, the way you have to be somewhat careful about as well as what actually happened with that error in the spec in the implementation world.
Right. I think this is around backward compatibility and certainly at the end of a spec there are certain things where you see, okay, this is an obvious mistake in the spec and nobody of the right mind could actually interpret that that way. But sometimes, in my experience, you sit there and you think, what did we do? I mean, why did we spec that this way? Why did we make this mistake? And you really would like to go back in time, fix this up and say, okay, this is now we figured it out. And that's kind of hard to do even in a new revision of the spec, even if you have a new JSR, because you somehow have to deprecate things, but at the same time, you kind of have to make it compatible, I feel.
Yeah, that's something you have to be mindful of, is whenever you're creating a new spec, you're creating legacy. You don't realize it at a time, but you have to be thinking about that, because you have to live with those choices.
Yeah, it can be really hard. In the standard edition platform, which is the one that's just been out there the longest, I mean, we struggle with compatibility all the time, but it's like the number one priority. Mm-hmm. So there are things in there which, if we were designing it from scratch, would be totally different, but you can't break existing applications.
Mm-hmm. So are there any strategies to get around that problem?
There aren't any really that are pleasant. You know, we spend a fair amount of time in the SE team looking at things and thinking, okay, well, these two methods really ought to be working the same way. That's what the specs say. But this method, since 1997, has been doing this, and so we wind up changing the spec to say to describe what all the implementations have been doing since 1996 and. You know, we sigh and move on to the next one. It's living with your past, but with a successful platform, that's sort of one of the curses of success.
Yeah, that's not unique to Java.
Oh, no.
No, all the platforms have this problem.
Of course not.
How would you say that Java and the JCP has created growth opportunity for vendors and users? For a nice abstract, general kind of question. Or maybe we don't want to speak to that.
Well, I would like to comment. I just had a talk today, and I showed a demo on mobile telephony API, and I think that Java just creates an opportunity for vendors to provide new applications and to make just process of updating of the software in mobile devices a lot easier. So this is kind of new opportunities for new services, and at the same time saving money, time to update software. So this was one of the main topics, actually main focus of today's demo. So I think this is really something really special about Java.
And I think it's somewhat unique to mobile in that we all have different operating systems and different chipsets and different hardware configurations, probably much more rich variety than what big Java has to live with. And Java is like a neutralizing force that, despite all the changes underneath, you can still enable third-party content in a fairly neutral way.
In a similar way, it creates markets in big Java, because with the standard, you compete on, you collaborate together on the specification and you compete on the implementations. And because of the openness and the ability it's fairly straightforward to license the specification and get started. It has, I think, enabled a lot of ISVs, open source communities, you know, really enabled the growth.
I agree on that point. So actually, one of the first companies who implemented one of the OSS to Java specifications was a startup company who started with implementing our specification, and that was their main business. And they are now one of the most active, or one of the active companies within our initiative, so that clearly creates marketplaces.
Yeah. I think I would like to tease Jim a little bit about his statement about the different operating systems, the different screen sizes, the different keyboards, and so forth. I mean, to be honest, we have that for years, and we can deal with it. And that's really, I think I keep hearing that from mobile people, oh, we have all these different operating, different keyboard, different resolutions, and it's kind of, of course.
But just so we all agree that our job is harder.
Okay, yeah, of course. Our job
is harder. It's littler.
Of course.
Yeah, Exactly,
and I keep having that discussion with people from the mobile space, and I still remember I was at the W3C kickoff meeting of the... Of the mobile initiative, and exactly we had that same discussion, and then I said basically I have a completely different laptop than everybody else in this room. There is nothing that is the same. We have different operating systems, we have different screen sizes, and the guy in front of me, I'm not going to mention his name, said, well, basically look at my laptop, it's exactly the same. And I said, no, you have French keyboard, top left key is A, you have a different screen resolution, you have a different operating system than I do. And that's just something that I think is interesting, why this causes so much trouble. It seems to be one of the main topics of mobile interaction and or interoperability, I should say. And it somehow, I don't know why it, why this is so different. On the other hand, just to comment on the general idea of does a standard or does JCP generate growth opportunities, I would say every standard that is introduced gives the ability to people to implement the standard and provide infrastructure underneath, so it creates a market there, but at the same time it creates a much bigger market for people to write applications on top of that. And so I would say every standard that is introduced generates two new markets that didn't exist before, namely the infrastructure market underneath the standard and the application market that sits on top of that. And certainly in our space, I think that generates a huge market that just wasn't, or two huge markets that just were not there before.
And in the mobile space, in the Nokia keynote, Petti Kohrinen mentioned today that today about 23 million mobile application downloads take place every month. So that is quite a big market that didn't exist a couple of years ago, and it is still rapidly growing. And furthermore, with the new, more advanced mobile platforms that we are coming up for the next generation, we will open up also the space for mobile middleware and services for service-oriented architecture. So these all will create quite some growth opportunities for applications and services and business.
Some of you have talked about how version 2.6 has made things easier and faster for you to work with. Would you say that it's also helped to spur innovation?
I think it helps us get a lot more feedback a lot quicker, and the more people look at stuff, the earlier, the better, the more...
More ideas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, more channels for input, more voices in the conversation.
Yeah, I think the early part is especially important. Yeah. When I was doing JSR 51, like, I want more feedback on this, but the process wouldn't allow me to get it. Okay. And that was frustrating.
Yeah, we got hundreds of feedback, hundreds of emails from people, or even, I mean, there are people that are sending like lists of 20 or 30 comments on the spec. Mm-hmm. And we actually saw it slow down during the process. So in early review, we got the most feedback, and then public review was about half of that, but it still was in the hundreds. And then during final approval ballot and later in the process, when the comments alias is still open, there is only a little trickle of feedback that's coming in.
The JSRs that I was involved with prior to 2.6, in fact, prior to 2.5, the level of feedback was, you know, frankly, kind of disappointing. You know, since you could really only put this stuff out fairly late in the game.
Do you think the reason you were getting more feedback was that you were doing earlier beta releases, so that there people were building the product and making it visible to their customers, so you had that multiplier effect?
Well, I haven't personally done a technical JSR in the new process.
Okay? Yeah.
We're reacting to the counterbalance, you know, the before and after thing.
We even see that people start building applications and implementations ahead of time, even before the final release. And that certainly helps, because you really find the issues with the spec when you actually build that.
Right.
And obviously, the reference implementation has to be built, but it really helps if there is two or three other implementations that are going to be built at the same time. And not just by expert group members, but by just people who have, in a more public fashion, access to the API or to the spec itself.
There's actually an indirect benefit that I only learned about yesterday. Maybe this is obvious to other folks, but I was talking to a guy who's a writer, and his career is writing some of the more popular, you know, books about the Java Standard Edition platform, and he's absolutely thrilled that, you know, with JCP 2.6, the fact that he can follow all the component JSRs that are going to be in Mustang, he can follow the Mustang JSR itself, and he can send his book, you know, he can put his book to bed the day we ship, and have him on the book have the book on in the stores the next month. Whereas before, these writers, and I, you know, I've worked with many of them over the years working on the Standard Edition platform, you know, these writers, you know, they'd be sort of begging for stuff, and, well, if you join the JCP, then I can give this stuff early, and, you know, but now, you know, it's just going to be out there for everybody to see, and they're thrilled. And having those books be published earlier, you know, can only be a benefit to the wider community.
Jonathan Schwartz said in his keynote on Monday he used examples from Thomas Jefferson and J.P. Morgan to illustrate his point that social structures or communities intertwine with economic opportunity through technology. Do you see this? Do you see this effect in your work with the JCP? Social structures in any kind, in any way?
Well, I can.
or not.
Since most places in the world.
That's good.
Face-to-face meetings. But
enhances travel opportunities. No, we didn't talk about that.
I've never had so many Greek flyer miles.
Thomas Jefferson said that?
Mm-hmm. Jonathan Schwartz said it, but it's
a great keynote, John.
Yeah, I missed it.
Well, you just came for lunch. So.
You're right. Just got here.
Well, I mean, we see it in... Yeah, might surprise you. I'll talk about open source again.
I can talk about
open source. You can see, for example, Apache Geronimo is a J2EE server project at Apache, right? And it's we can do it at Apache because of change in the JCP, and we're implementing a JCP specification. And you're starting to see commercial organizations starting to participate, and they're participating as equals, collaborating as peers. In the project. And we've seen this before in other projects at Apache and other open source communities. So there is this economic opportunity that comes in a different kind of collaboration model that doesn't require, it just enabled through the openness of the way we're able to work. And that's pretty compatible with the current JCP process now. So.
And I would say that especially the open source communities actually work on a very social level. So if you, or let's put it that way, there is a moral obligation. If you take a lot of stuff out of the community, you kind of, if you fix something, you give it back to the community. And that's just good manners in the sense. And I think from that perspective, there is certainly, from an open source perspective, and the JCP going more into an open source direction, there is certainly a lot.
And
with
it's more than good manners, right? It's sort of common sense that sort of the market's driving you to do this, to put back and keep collaborating on the platform that you're building, and you're going to make money elsewhere, right?
Exactly.
You're going to innovate around what's common, provide value, provide innovation, but you always want to make sure that platform you're building on is solid, and you know, a level playing field for everyone, and supportive of the things that you want to do. So.
Well, I think it's also in environment of diversity that in most JSRs, the expert groups are very diverse in the sense of really large companies like, was it a small city like Siemens, participating together with sort of individuals with groups like Apache, and also small companies, large companies, very sort of. You have to, as a group, learn how you interact with each other, where you have to take into account that not everybody speaks English as well as I do. And that you have to sort of also work you have to sort of rotate meetings around, the conference around, so that not always the same person is up late at night to be in a conference call. And so you have to learn how to sort of play with others in sort of various ways, and I think one of the statistics I've seen over sort of the 6 years that the JCP exists, if you look at the first 3 years compared with the next 3 years, then JSRs of the last 3 years are going faster by about sort of 100 to 150 days. Now I think in a part of that is due to some of the rule change that we've made, like that you get feedback much earlier so you can actually do something with that. But I think the other thing is because, well, people like Mark and so and others and Jim, well, you're doing your second or your third JSR, and the same with expert group members that you work on, we all sort of learning how this works. And we're just in part just getting better at it, how you get sort of agreement and consensus on the complex technical and sometimes business issues.
Kay, you know, having neither heard Jonathan Schwartz nor Thomas Jefferson say this, maybe I didn't get it quite right. But I think one thing, you know, we've been at this for quite a while, and we sometimes, I think, forget
some of the characteristics of the JCP, and there's been a tension from the beginning between the desire to be as open as possible and have as broad a community as possible, which we see in other forums in which we most of our companies participate, can result in the proverbial camel that was supposed to be a horse, because there's just so many people with so many diverse and competing interests that it takes forever, and when it's finished, it's too late. And so the JCP has put in place some processes that are oriented towards quicker and more definitive results. Okay, and as I said, there's been a constant tension because, for instance, the spec lead can limit the participation in his expert group, his or her expert group, and the spec lead has a requirement to produce RIs and TCKs, and has a substantial amount of leeway in the way they run their expert groups, and the open to the world and let's go do wonderful things for whatever you're about model, has some objection to that. And I happen to think that as we evolve this process, that what we're doing is when the tension pulls one way, we change the process, pulls another way. But basically, the JCP is still producing results that seem to be tracking this technology and to the benefit of a very large community. And consequently, I would say, wasn't Thomas Jefferson smart to to have thought of this?
Jonathan Schwartz said it. So, what would you say is next then for Java and the JCP? What's going to be in version 2.7? What technologies are you working on that you're excited about? What changes will they bring for users? Who are the new members? What are they going to bring to the table? Like that.
Wow.
This is your...
yes, 6, 11.
42.
I think there are, I already said earlier on, I think there are technologies that were not even on the radar screen that are now going to be embraced within the JCP. Oracle is particularly looking forward to service-oriented architecture work. We are pleased to and very enthusiastic about the work with EJB 3.0, announced, I think, this week that we're going to be co-spec leads on, and they're going to provide the RI for. So we participate not in the new hard-hitting, fast-moving ME space, but rather in the mature, big Java space.
Slow-moving,
but large space. And yet we still see in that space, some very interesting technological innovation going on, and I'm very enthusiastic about it. No one else wants to talk about their product plans, huh?
you can read about it. Apache.
Is it open?
Well, in that case, I'd like to open the questions up to the participating press on the floor. If anybody has a question for the group or for a person specifically.
Yeah, I've got one for David. Just a clarification. You said earlier that you wanted a particular change to happen, the review process opened up a bit. Is that to say you wanted the review process to be opened up to people outside of the Java community or outside of the JCP? I just don't know if the reviews before that were only aspects of the JCP members.
Well, the thing that was changed in JCP 2.6, that was what was called the community review, is just considered now the early review, and the early review could, I think, at the spec lead's discretion, if I'm not mistaken, be either made available to the members of the JCP or to the public. Or is it always to the public now?
In the JCP there were two mandatory draft review phases. So the first one used to be called community review, And so that was only accessible to JCP members. You had to be a member to be able to see that draft.
Okay.
Then the second one later in the process called public review, and that is the name suggests, is open to the public. You have to have an internet connection, but then you can sort of download the spec. What we did in 2.6 is making both publicly accessible.
Okay.
And so to indicate that, we, in our collective wisdom, we changed the name of community review into early draft review. So that's the first sort of mandatory review phase, and then public review is still basically the same.
And the most important change with that is that there's no vote from the executive committee on the first draft anymore. So actually in JCP 2.5, with the community review, there was a vote connected if you can continue to work on this Java specification request, while in the new JCP version 2.6, you can release an early draft to the public just for the sake of getting feedback from your community without having fear from the EC, you know, oh no, they won't be down.
The vote at that point was motivating a lot of people to basically almost finish their specs before they even got a community review, and that was just bollocksing up the entire process and limiting feedback. So.
Actually, we're trying to take that to the limit now and release an early draft without any Java interfaces. So we just have the document ready to describe where our JSR fits and what use cases we want to cover and everything, but there's actually no Java specification in there right now, so let's see how that works out.
Yeah. Kind of to answer your question, kind of the idea was to get as much feedback in the beginning from the general public rather than from just the select JCP members, and I think that's probably
I'm really pleased to hear that it's paying off, because what we were observing indeed before that, I think Mark, you were talking about that, is that most of the comments on the JSR would come in during public review, mm-hmm. which of course that people are taking the time to send in the comments is great. But I think where the spec that they're struggling with is that it comes too late for them. That's great input, but they can't act upon it in a JSR anymore because they're close to the finish. And so I think what really seems to be paying off in with the change with JCP 2.6, that is indeed sort of more eyes are looking at earlier, and spec leads still have the ability to act upon that feedback within the life cycle of that same JSR.
Are there any concerns that Sun still has too much control over the JCP?
Sun has no concerns about that.
Well, from our end, I mean, since we were kind of going off the beaten path with having an open source licensing or a true open source licensing on our spec, the reference implementation and the TCK, I have to say it all worked out. Maybe there was a little bit of friction with the Sun lawyers here and there, but obviously it was the first time for them to experience that kind of licensing and how they react to that. And it worked out in the end, so from my end, there are no complaints at all.
Even people inside Sun have friction with Sun lawyers.
Is there any reason there's nobody here from DEA or IBM today?
No. We learned are in total, 32 executive committee members. And I think we would fill up the room just with ourselves if we bring everybody here. And I think that, so what we typically do with sort of press panels that we organize at Java One or other conferences is that we try to bring sort of representation from both ECs to the panel, but sort of try to keep sort of the soccer team here sort of somewhat manageable in size for the sake of discussion.
Any other questions? Yes.
I just want to ask Mark, what do you think Microsoft can bring to the JSP in terms of what will it be bringing to the JSP?
Into the JCP?
Sorry.
Well, if they would decide to join it, I suppose there are a variety of things they could be interested in. Didn't expect this question.
I'm glad you said it.
You know, if nothing else, I mean, one of the big ways that I think you'll be seeing, you know, members of the Java community, you know, responding and working with Microsoft is on the whole interoperability thing. I mean, you know, .NET obviously is not going to be part of the JCP, but working on the interoperability technologies, the web services technologies, all the different ways in which Java technologies can talk to, you know, Microsoft.NET or whatever technologies, you know, all of that is very important to almost all of our customers. You know, so if Microsoft would like to get involved in JSRs along those lines, you know, that'd be great. Or it might also be interesting, you know, I'm just making this up, for Microsoft to get involved in actual Java JSRs that are commonly interfaced to some of their technology. Maybe they would be interested in helping out on JDBC. You know, even though they aren't shipping a Java implementation anymore, I think there are a lot of Java applications out there that use JDBC to talk to Microsoft SQL Server, and maybe Microsoft could bring some expertise to make, you know, some future version of JDBC better in that way.
Any interest in any specific specification
yet,
or just announced?
I'm not sure that either Mark or I have the visibility into what Microsoft is looking at or not looking at.
Yeah,
I mean, the specs are publicly available, so they can go to the website and read them to their heart's content. I guess that's the whole purpose of being open.
Yeah, I don't know of any particular announcement.
Yeah.
But.
Yes, does the JCP have a role in promoting the proliferation of other languages that run under the JVM?
Yes, certainly. Absolutely. The Groovy JSR is currently in progress.
And what other languages are part of the process?
There's a JSR for the Bean Shell scripting language, mm-hmm. was recently approved.
There's the JavaScript engine in Mustang.
That's not really a JCP's.
Okay.
Those are two.
I'm sure we'd welcome more.
Yep. Right, and I think the source line mapping and so forth. Just a couple of administrational JSRs that actually make the debugging of other languages that are compiled to bytecode
mm-hmm.
certainly help.
Yeah,
I think it's JSR 45, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right. I mean, if you want to think of JSPs as another language, well, that's, you know, JSPs have obviously been specified in JCP JSRs for a long, long time. But yeah, there are going to be more, things like, you know, new bytecodes for the VM to enable other languages. Well, yes, obviously that will also be handled in a JSR in the future.
Is there any guideline for license fee or the royalty?
Any guidelines for license fee and
or royalty?
No, I think the JSPA says the usual. Legal wording, like it needs to be reasonable and non-discriminatory. I think for the rest, the JCP gives some freedom to spec leads in what kind of model they want. The historical and I think still the existing reason for that is that being a spec lead is expensive. Because you need to not only write the sort of the specification document about what your API does, but you also need to develop two pieces of software, so the reference implementation and the test suite. So as a spec lead, you will have real engineers at work that just cannot do something else. So at the minimum, the spec lead will be struggling with things like cost of lost opportunity, other kinds of things, because it has qualified engineers at work that can't do something else. So the JCP has chosen a model where indeed the spec lead, if they want to, can attempt to achieve sort of cost recovery on the investment on the RI and TCK, and also on the support for sort of the greater benefit of the community, because sort of high quality RIs and TCKs serve the community at large. Because that leads to sort of getting closer to the 10-year-old ideal of write once run anywhere. So having said that, I think you'll see in the JCP a wide variety of models where indeed for some JSRs indeed royalties are being charged for the TCK, for some others use a flat fee, or for other JSRs the TCK is free. So all kinds of different models are being used.
Who set the guidelines? Because you told me that some are free, some are free and cheaper, and some are that have some royalties. So who set the guidelines?
Yeah, okay. There is not really a guideline as such, and I don't think as a community you have to be really careful about articulating a guideline, because you could easily get into antitrust scenario. So the So the JSPA, so the legal agreement to join the JCP has sort of the boilerplate language that you will see in standards organizations. The JCP is not really that different in that sense from other organizations. So where it talks about reasonable and non-discriminatory and so on. But it's then up to the spec lead to determine what model they choose. And I think that the spec lead will be motivated to be reasonable with that, because if they sort of say put a ridiculous amount on a TCK, nobody's going to license that, and they're not going to recoup their costs.
The other thing is that with every step of the process, the spec lead has to announce the current state of his business terms when you read the spec lead guide. So the EC is aware of what will this company with his this JSR go for their terms. So, and if it's too unreasonable, they will get feedback from the EC, I would say. But if you look at the J2ME JSRs, you will see that there are some common terms we use. And even with the 248, there's in the statement that they try to align how to license us to the market.
Yes. So,
just in order to understand correctly, can you show me? Can you just give the one just example about the charging the loyalty? For example, the Motorola phone or Nokia phone. Is there is this, which is common and reasonable? Because sometimes reasonable, being reasonable is quite blurry. Some people, they're reasonable, and some other people maybe it's not too much. It's too much. So can you give us just an example?
So at least in the mobile space, what Nokia is recommending and what is also in the mobile service architecture work recommended for the component JSRs is a one-time fee, so no volume-based royalties. And we think that the principle should be a cost recovery for the development of the TCK, and that can be achieved by charging a one-time fee. And volume-based royalties are not recommended, as we think that this would lead to making profit on popular JSRs, which should not be the intent on with standardization.
So you have to divide the TCK from the RI, because the RI is a playing field and everyone can implement it. But to have a standard implementation, you have to have the TCK. Else you can't prove that your implementation is according to the standard. So everyone out there who thinks this is a business has to get the TCK. And therefore, I think we all are more or less on the same ground here, that TCK shouldn't be a business.
Yeah, that certainly sounds view. And we generally charge a flat fee for TCK access, and then for nonprofit organizations like Apache, we basically fund that fee ourselves.
For us as a small vendor, this kind of hit us twice, and that's maybe one thing. Obviously, we're not in a position to have anyone pay us for the TCK or the RI, so we basically had to open source this to get adoption. Obviously, for you guys who are all much bigger vendors, that's easier to ask for money for those things. And on the other hand, since we're 100 people, and obviously we underestimated the amount of effort that the JSR was in the beginning. And just to give you a rough order of magnitude, we spent about 15 to 20 man years in our JSR, and for a small company, that's a big chunk of our engineers working on that right there. So, but still, I still look at our JSR as being extremely successful for our company, not with respect to financial or direct financial benefits, but with respect to name recognition and a lot of immaterial value that we got out of that.
Oh no, I apologize for not knowing this, but I know this is the kind of thing we have had discussions about over the years as we've been evolving the process. And isn't it true that we we encourage or require that the business terms be made visible earlier in the process than we did initially. So one of the things we have done is to make sure that encourage that the nature of the agreement is known at the point when we're making decisions in the process. So there is some vetting of that. And if someone were to come in with what look like onerous business terms for a perfectly acceptable technical effort, they might find that it doesn't get approved by the process.
This is just from the gentleman from the Apache Foundation. Sorry, I can't read his name.
It's okay. I can pronounce it. It's
Gare. I was just wondering, you said you're happy about the openness of the Java community process. Mm-hmm. Are you satisfied? Is the Apache Foundation satisfied yet?
No. We're, one of the things that...
No satisfied? Yes. Sorry.
We believe that there's still more work to do, and that's why we participate. And we participate constructively, and... We think that tremendous progress has been made because clearly from the Apache Software Foundation, you can see our model of working, and that's openness. The JCP is not that model. We realize it can't be that model, but there's things that we can bring from our experience into the JCP to make the JCP better. So when I say I'm not satisfied, it's not a criticism, right? It's sort of, we have an ideal that our contribution is to push towards that. And so far, the process has grown and adapted very well. Does that answer?
Any other questions?
For those who have been involved for a number of years, do you have any impression of the pace of the process or any change in the pace of the process over time? And do you feel that the pace of the process today is sufficient for you to meet your business objectives?
Yeah, I think from the perspective of JCP versus other industry standard bodies, JCP is pretty lean and mean right now. There's not a lot of overhead in terms of creating a new JSR, going through the various review processes and approvals. It's pretty lightweight, and I'm not sure what else you could do to make it even leaner and still keep it a consistent process. So at least from our perspective, it's a pretty idealistic process right now in terms of the amount of overhead that you would have to do for participation. Going back to the very early years, like Ono was saying, it was much more difficult because it was a very Sun-centric process. And you had to get things approved through Sun, and everything had to go through Sun. So it's much more open now. So in terms of over the time, yeah, it's much, much better.
I do think that one thing, when you start with a clean slate, that you can develop specifications and RIs and TCKs and as soon as you have the consensus you're looking for, as soon as the technology is baked, it's done. Okay, as we said, this is a technology which has matured, and we now have a whole lot of installed base, and so you have the problem of developing specifications that have to fit into the context of what's already in our customers' hands, for instance. So that is something that might be viewed as slowing things down. Okay, but I think as far as I agree with your evaluation, as far as a process is concerned, that my evaluation of processes across not just this forum but all forums is I want a process that if you have consensus and if you have a technology that is here and now, not one which you're creating and still aren't sure what it is, but if you have a technology and you have a community of interest and has consensus on what it's going to be, I want a process that allows me to get that technology out as soon as possible. And I think this is a pretty lean process. Okay, and it doesn't have the 4-month wait here and a letter ballot there, and you got to wait for people to respond and all. Basically, wham, bam, slam. You can have yourself an approved, JSR. Okay. On the other hand, if you don't have consensus, okay, if the technology isn't done, okay, if you have some issues with trying to address some of the upper compatibility issues, it's going to take a little bit longer. Okay, but I want a process that doesn't doesn't impose a lag that's not necessary. So.
If there aren't any more questions, I'd like to thank you all for coming. I'd like to especially thank the panelists for speaking today. There's snacks and beverages in the back, and if you'd like to talk to anybody, there's one more question.
Sure. Is there going to be any mechanism for essentially deprecating a stalled API in JSR?
As
there is.
For deprecating an API?
We already, well, in SE, there, I mean, there is a deprecation mechanism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have one?
What more do you want?
Which one do you want?
I do, but in addition to politics, I'm going to avoid mentioning it. JSR has been sitting there for a couple of years and hasn't been moving forward. And there's a sort of a tendency to.
Do you install JSR?
No, it's JSR.
Oh, JSR
itself.
Not an API.
What did I say?
It's different.
So one thing I've been thinking about. So indeed, it's over JSR where it's not clear whether people are just thinking very hard or whether indeed they're doing something else. So I've been thinking about what you could do about that. We had, leading up to 2.6, indeed, the expert group had some discussions about it. In that release, we didn't directly work on it, except for generally making JSRs more transparent, so you have a better chance of discovering whether it's just while they're working very hard or whether indeed they're asleep. But I've been thinking about whether indeed there is a way to easier find the black sheep in the family. So one way I was thinking of is that after JSR review approval at the beginning, so somebody submits a proposal, the EC members approve it, then the JSR gets a certain time to reach the next phase. And probably you come to make that sort of the amount that they get reasonably long, because some JSRs just take longer because they are just very complex and so on. And then if they would run out of that time, nothing bad happens to the JSR. They just have to come back to the EC so that the EC can sort of give them another nod and say, yeah, okay, here you go, here you have another X amount of time, or whether indeed then at that point the community has a chance to sort of interject and say, I'm not so sure this is really working out. Come back later. Because with some JSRs, this is indeed sort of what Dom was referring to, but some JSRs are submitted a little ahead of their time. That it doesn't seem that during the course of JSR that sort of the common ideas actually settled down. And that in itself is not bad. Those things happen. And it's sort of, well, try again later. So that's the sort of been thinking of. Don't think in the EC we've discussed that much, what my sort of dear EC members think of that, but
it sounds Dutch, but he has the role of the Italian enforcer when it comes to this. So I can tell you, unfortunately, we've had some JSRs that got into the stage you're talking about, and we get a call from Ono suggesting, it's my spec lead that I go, take them to the woodshed and see if we can see if we can either get some progress or stop them. There are other forums that have a heartbeat kind of thing. W3C has something like that, and it is something which we could do procedurally. Right now, it's done more ad hoc, and I think in some ways it's probably appropriate for us right now, because as Ono says, you start some things and you pretty much know exactly what you need to do, and there's technology that's pretty much been embraced already, and it's can be done. Others, you start with whole cloth and you get people together and you think you're in agreement and you realize all of a sudden, gee, everyone's got a different idea and we really don't have a consensus.
I realize some problems are just extremely hard and take a lot of time, and there's people putting a lot of effort into it, and if it takes time, it takes time. On the other hand, when something becomes a JSR, there's sort of an official imprimatur on it, and when it gets stalled and nothing happens for a couple of years, other really worthy possibilities are kind of corked behind it, And there needs to be a mechanism to blow out that cork and let something supplant it that's actually going to move forward and make progress.
Yes. I think you're sort of thinking in the right direction. I think where perhaps the little difficulty is that how do you, you need to be able to have a way to sort of distinguish between the two. Because you take some JSR 14 generics, that took a long time. But I think, so with hindsight, I think it took a long time for good reason. That in the end, the community ended up with sort of close to the best sort of solution possible. And so at the same time, you don't want then to shoot such a thing in its head just because it doesn't apply to some arbitrary time period that us bureaucrats had chosen. So I think that's sometimes where the trick is, that sort of how do you discover the heartbeat?
In our JSR, discovering the heartbeat would be monitoring the mailing list. And basically, maybe that's an idea. I mean, we can give access to our mailing lists to the PMO, and if you guys see that for 4 months there has not been a single email back and flying back and forth, then chances are pretty high that everybody's sleeping. And I mean, for us, for example, it took very long to get to community review at the time, and it took, I think, 1.5 years to get there. But we were busy working on that stuff, and it was the first standardization in that space, and that's why it took so long for the very, very first draft to be reasonable. But I think that may be a hard rate for you guys, just seeing what's going on. I think with the current setup, you anyway should have access to the mailing list anyway. Maybe that's a way.
I invite you. I've got the time. There's another question, but I've got a time signal to wind up. So any other questions? If we could take them into the refreshment period, that would be good. I want to thank you again all very much for coming and for speaking. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for moderating.
Yes, thank you guys.